Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Cale, Braden Gall, Chase McCabe. We are live out at St. Thomas Sports Park. Titans camp today. The Titans and Bucks round two of practice before they get together Saturday at Nissan Stadium for the second game of the preseason. And joining us right now, Teron Davenport covers the Titans for ESPN. Teron, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, man. You know, another day of football, so you know I can't help but smile, man. But before we start talking, the Nate Washington, Derek Mason thing, listen, no disrespect to Nate Washington, but putting a Washington name on the 85 is like, you know, you have Lexus and Toyota. You take the Toyota badge and you put that on a Lexus.
Same company, same brand, different quality.
So when you see the Acura logo on a Civic,
different price.
Well, that's the reverse. You know, you see a Honda logo on an Acura, and it's like, okay, the same. You know what I mean?
Right,
D. Mason's a legend here, man. I've already picked that up. Always loved his game.
But he's out this morning with a stomach flu, so I don't know if the legend really still applies.
It's a maintenance day.
Maintenance day. That's right. You know, you got to.
He's been ripping on the maintenance day. He's not a fan of the maintenance day. It's the old school player, right? And I get it. I understand why an old guard sort of looks at this new wave of players and says, man, they're not as tough as we were. I agree. But it's just a different. We know more about the human body. We've learned more about technology. But that leads us to Corey Davis, which is somebody we've talked about pretty much, I think, every day on the show. Since you got here in February. He's such a critical part of what this offense is going to look like. I have long thought he's going to be okay. Titans fans should wait until he gets into games and plays a full season before we start to cast judgment. But it does seem like, in your opinion, that he's starting to make waves. You're working on a big piece. So what have you seen from Corey Davis in camp so far? And are you optimistic about what he's going to be?
I would be very optimistic. And just from watching him, I see improvement. Just from, you know, watching his college film, I watched a little bit last year, but to see him actually every day, his releases are getting a lot better. He's doing a really good job of working on catching the football. After practice, he's there on the jugs machine, and he's catching, you know, I don't know how many, maybe 40 to 50 balls. That's remarkable. And when you watch him, just the confidence that he's starting to gain, the timing, especially yesterday, they're working the play action. Right, and you see him being moved across the formation. There was one play where they had him as the number three man inside. So it was Trips left, actually. And there was Tajay Sharp was on the outside. Taywan Taylor was number two. And then he was number three, furthest, closest to the tackle. And they ran play action. He ran a skinny post. And you talk about a ball being on the money. That thing was on the money. He turned his head. The ball was right there. He snapped it out the air, and he just kept running. And snapping it out the air and continuing to run is something that you really need to be able to do, especially in this offense where you're getting the yards after the catch, right? And that shows confidence catching the football, and that comes from continuously catching it and, you know, to be able to run through the catch. So that's something I've seen. Getting back to the releases, you see him freaking corners at the line of scrimmage, you know. A lot of times at Western Michigan, he was able to just use his size, just the body, the corner up and get, you know, get behind him. But here, the guys are just as fast as you. A lot of them are stronger. A lot of them are the same size. So you have to rely on other things. And that's what Rob Moore, a guy who had 50, he led the league in receiving yards in 97, 1,500 yards. And seeing a guy like that work with not only Corey Davis but the other guys, you're really
Taylor's
starting to
really
see the
come
result.
Along too.
Taylor
mm-hmm.
also, yeah. And even Tajay. And I mean, you got to talk about Nick Williams. You know, White Chocolate, man. He's out there doing the thing, man. So it's good to see these receivers as a whole. They're growing, but Corey Davis especially.
How many are you keeping? How many do you think they are on the roster at the end of the day? Who are they?
Six, I would say, because you got the special teams with Nick Williams. But you got Corey Davis, Taywan, Tajay Sharp, Darius Jennings / Deontay Burnett, the guy called 7-11 because he's always open. You know, it's a toss-up. And, I mean, unfortunately, Mike Campanero continues to be hurt. It's tough. But I would say six guys, though.
You talk about receivers getting open yesterday. Let's flip it to the other side where Tampa Bay with Mike Evans, DeSean Jackson, both were able to get behind Malcolm Butler. Malcolm Butler's a guy we've talked a lot about this year on this show, from the amount of money he got paid in free agency to what happened with Belichick in the Super Bowl to actually having a really good camp for the most part. But yesterday, DeSean and Mike Evans were able to get past him. What do you make of that? Is that just simply a good player making a good player a good play against another good player, or is there something more?
They call Mike Evans Debo for a reason, man. Like, that guy is – it's really – he's unguardable. You could always throw it up, and he'll go up and get it. A lot of people forget he was an outstanding basketball player in high school, and he uses all of that posting up, you know, going up and grabbing that rebound, so to speak. And that's what happens when you have that big body like that. So I'm going to, you know, kind of excuse that. I mean, obviously you're paying Malcolm Butler a lot of money. You don't want to see that happen, but it happens, you know, especially going against Mike Evans. Now, Deshaun, Nick, you know, from seeing him back in Philly, man.
Who can run with him?
I don't think anybody can.
He can still fly.
D-Jack got wheels.
Yep.
And, you know, when you get a guy like that, and he got behind Malcolm in one-on-ones, but, you know, let's face it, that's built for the receiver, for the offense. So you're going to see that happen. A lot of times, you know, because it's one-on-one and the focus is just on them and the guy gets beat, it gets magnified. But the few times that Deshaun beat him, a lot of times you're going to have that safety over top. So it's just, you know, it's give and take. But I would be concerned about a few things with Malcolm Butler. And the few things that I would be concerned about is you look at the Green Bay game, Devontae Adams, when he beat him deep, yeah, he got by him. But go back and look at the line of scrimmage, right? And you'll see him instantly winning his route. Just like that. The ball snap.
One step.
He gives him a move.
Is that a physicality thing at the line getting off of press, or is that like just a hip thing and a lateral movement thing?
It's a mixture of everything. Yeah. I actually have a piece that I posted this morning about Adoree Jackson, and he was talking about how
–
yeah, exactly. And he was talking about how, you know, patience and all that and, you know, being athletic comes into play. And that's something that it's a feel thing, and – if you don't get a jam on a guy like a Deshaun Jackson right away, you're done, right? But even like Devontae Adams, you know, he was able to get him at the line. I saw Tajae Sharpe get him at the line last week, and then I saw Tajae Sharpe at the top of the route turn him around, and it's just like, okay, listen, we can't have that kind of thing happen. As a coach, that's what I would be saying. We can't have that kind of thing happen. If a guy runs by you, you know, just physically he's faster than, hey, look, you know what?
Right.
That's my bad for not having that coverage over top to help you. But if he beats you at the line of scrimmage, that's an issue. And that's something that we saw two or three times in the past couple weeks.
Well, and even the Devontae Adams play, he showed good closing speed. He closed on the ball at the end. It's proper technique. He gets the arm up. He turns and looks for the ball. But you got to make the play. Like, he just lost the football, and he couldn't find it at the end. And I guess if it was Aaron Rodgers, I'd say that's probably a touchdown. So, you know, that is clearly a concern. And D-Mace has been concerned about the deep ball against for Malcolm Butler for a long time. I think the collection of the secondary together, though, I'm not as worried about. There's another guy I am worried about, and it's Rashawn Evans. I think he's an extremely talented player. I love his game. I think he fits this defense great. Do you have any theories on what the heck's going on with Rashawn Evans, and how do you feel about the fact that you don't know anything about Rashawn Evans?
I know one thing. It's not heat-related, because the dude was out here the other weekend, a full-flown hoodie, you know, like an actual sweatshirt, and it was like 90 degrees, you know what I mean? So it's definitely not that. I don't think it's good that no one knows anything that's going on with him. He was out here doing an upper body workout, so I'm going to assume, and this is an assumption, that it's lower body, I think hamstring, something along those lines.
Soft tissue.
It kills a lot of athletes, man.
Yes, it does.
But I'm going to assume it's that. We definitely should be able to at least have a you know, like Doug Peterson used to say, hey, look, it's a lower body injury. That's what he would say about Sidney Jones. It's a low. Well, yeah, obviously.
It's a hockey thing.
He blew his Achilles out. I know it's a lower body injury. But still, at least you shared something, you know.
Law, this will be the last time we talk to you before the preseason game number 2 on Saturday night. How do you expect things to play out as far as the ones go, as far as snaps and series compared to last week?
They've been very secretive about that, you know, the players and the coaches. I think we're going to see at least two or three drives on the offense, because they have to get that play calling thing going. I don't know if Coach LaFleur is going to go from the box as opposed to on the field like last week. But I think we'll see two or three series. I think defensively we're going to see a couple series also. And I think you're going to see a lot of Harold Landry. It's you know, time to show what he could do. And you saw the strip sack that he had last week, and he's someone, man.
He's got a different thing that around the edge. He's got a different thing.
Hey, I talked to him about that, and I remember last year, you know, with Derek Barnett. They used to call him Gumby because the dude could bend his body and run sideways, literally. And that's what you're seeing out of Harold Landry. This dude is really interesting as a pass rusher. Now, one of the things that we talked about was being able to stack moves on top of just that outside edge rush that he has, and he's doing that. I tell you what, if that dude could mix a spin move back inside, he's going to be freaking unstoppable, man. I'm excited. You know, I'm not a fan of the team. I'm a fan of football. So when I see a guy like this, it's exciting, man, and he's going to bring a lot this year.
Is he the guy? Because my question was going to be, you know, when you got here, you probably had some preconceived notions about players. What has been the most surprising thing to you, probably in the positive, of a player that you didn't anticipate seeing and now you really like him? And maybe it is Landry, and maybe that's who the answer is. But who are those guys or that guy for you where you got here and you had an expectation and now you're going, man, I'm thinking differently about him now?
Oh, that's a tough one. You know, I've been really impressed with Jarrell Casey, honestly, just the hard work that he puts in throughout practice and the work on the focus on technique. I mean, they're doing a lot of stuff with coach. I think it's Terrell Williams, the D-line coach. You know, they're working on just engaging in contact and turning the offensive lineman and shedding him and going and wrapping up. I really like some of the things that they're doing. I would probably say Vrabel. Well, the coaching staff as a whole is what has surprised me the most. The energy that they bring, right? And you look, Mike Vrabel goes from station to station to station and gets in there and gets involved. You know, and
he'll hold the tackling dummy and work on pass blocking drills.
Not only that, he'll beat the tackling dummy. You know, he was letting the inside linebackers wrap him up, you know, the other day. Then you see him engaging with Taylor Lewan, you know, on pass pro situations. And then you see him mixing it up with Derek Morgan and Harold Landry working on stunts. And just the knowledge that he's imparting on these guys is awesome. Coach Kerry Coons, man, fire. You know, that's the one word
He has one speed, man.
One speed, full speed, you know. And then even Pat O'Hara and Matt LaFleur, the stuff that they're doing with working on quick decisions with Mariota and all the quarterbacks. You know, you see them moving from side to side, and he'll clap real quick and point one way, and they got to throw the ball. It's working on quick decisions. And you know, it's this coaching staff, I've been pleasantly surprised with them. They're outstanding.
You talk about the quick decisions. Hopefully you can get the thought process, the mentality, and the psyche on whether or not that fan wearing a Nate Washington jersey was a quick decision or not. We're going to need some if you get quotes.
You guys are out of town.
You can report back to
no
us.
No respect for Nate Washington.
Man, no, it's not no respect for Nate Washington. It's not enough respect for Derek Mason.
Fair enough. I'll get on board with that.
All right, good stuff, Teron Davenport.
Appreciate it.
Covers the Titans for ESPN. When we come back, it is Stick to Sports time, but I got to tell you about my friends at Hermitage Golf Course, the number one daily fee course in the state of Tennessee, and it's not even close. Number one rated public course according to Golf Digest, PGA.com, and ESPN, the magazine. The tradition of golf excellence began in 1986, and it continues 32 years later with rolling stretches of scenic terrain laid out along the Cumberland River. It's as close to golf perfection as you will find, and it's more than just golf. It's weddings, it's cottages for stay-and-play packages, corporate outings, and an unbelievable food and beverage service that will leave you coming back for more. Hermitage Golf Course, so perfect, it might as well be private.